Good morning. You are watching The Program with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. It is Thursday, June 4th, 2026. And thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for liking, following, and sharing the show. Just this morning's schedule, we are going to do DMs. We're going to do The Program until from 9 to 10. So if you're watching in the live hour, please put in your questions into the YouTube and Rumble chats. And we will answer those questions as best we can. Those are going, so priority is going to go to the Rumble Rants and the Super Chats. Thank you very much for your generous support for the show, which we obviously desperately need in order to keep it going. 10 o'clock, TMI show with Manila Chan and myself for a lighter side of the news. Cartoonist Marjan Satrapi, who did Persepolis, has died at the age of 56. We will be covering that on the DMZ America podcast with myself and fellow cartoonist Scott Stantis at the 11 o'clock hour in about just about 2 hours from now. Good morning, JT. How are you doing? I know I just saw you over on your own show about 15 minutes ago. How was that?
How you doing, man? You doing okay?
It's good. It's funny how, like, you know, it's a different how the dynamic changes. Right. Like from it's just the two of us talking, but the context of the different shows just makes it like different.
Yes. Yeah. Because my audience prefers foreign policy. I've come to realize that like unless it's something like significant, like we could talk about, for example, in the context of foreign policy, we could say like we did on the show, we were talking about the Israel ceasefire, the war powers resolution. Okay, that stuff is permissible, right? But if it's something small or something like that, the context changes. No, it's a difference between shows.
Well, also, I think there's the context that, like, if, when it's your show, I'm being interviewed. So I'm just waiting to see what you have to say, and I'm just trying to answer your questions, as opposed to co-hosting is different, like, entirely.
Yeah,
different.
We're just talking. Right. Yeah, it's different.
It is so interesting. All right, so let's move on. Just a reminder, people have been asking about this. So if you are on Rumble, you can just do this through Rumble. If you're on YouTube, you can do this directly. You can subscribe to the show for $5 a month, and we appreciate that recurring membership because the steady cash flow is obviously, very helpful. I mean, not that the standalone donations aren't also very helpful. A dollar is a dollar is a dollar, but although these days a dollar is 90 cents is 80 cents. And if you pay $20 a month, we thank you in the closing credits and we're very appreciative. And if you pay a whopping $50 a month for the month, then you get to participate in the exclusive private chat. You can do all that through YouTube. It's pretty straightforward. If you have any questions about that, let us know in the chats. But on Rumble, you can't do it that way, but we still want to invite you to be part of it. Obviously, you can subscribe to Rumble. That's not a problem. But for the $20 and the $50 thing, you would have to send the money via PayPal, dprogrampodcast@gmail.com. We probably have other ways we can receive the money, but right now that's the easiest for us. And if you do the recurring membership, then just email Robbie@westglaciergaming@gmail, and he'll make sure that you end up on the list for whatever benefit you signed up for. Okay. We have War Powers Act is the main story of the day. Congress basically forced a vote and it went through the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives has voted to require Donald Trump to either stop attacking Iran, bring the troops home, or to go to Congress for approval. I'm not convinced that they would deny that approval if he were to go to them. Now the question is whether this goes on to the Senate, and if it does go on, passes the Senate, whether Trump's veto, which is a certainty, whether it would have legal standing. And we can talk about that. Israel and Lebanon have agreed, not coincidentally, to a full ceasefire for the time being. We'll talk about that. This Albania story, which sort of was percolating up yesterday's show, has blown up. It's now all over the place. Jared Kushner wants to develop luxury properties on the Albanian coast. It's a beautiful place, actually. It's like the other side of the Adriatic from Italy, right? So those even, but the problem is there's class and environmental concerns about this. It's a $1.4 billion luxury hotel complex in one of the world's poorest countries. And so people, or Europe's poorest countries, and their people are pissed, and they don't feel like, not only are you, you know, going to be extracting wealth from our country, you're going to be fucking up our environment, which already has, you know, a post-Soviet legacy to be dealt with. So anyway, where shall we start?
I got to be honest. Let's start with Albania, even though the story matters the least. It's one that interests me just because I was there. So I don't know exactly. Okay, so I was on the coast. I was in Vlorë. It is, I'm trying to describe it. Imagine if there's part of it that's very luxury-esque. Like, for one, it's inexpensive because it's a poor country in regards to Europe standards. But it gives you this flavor of Europe, but a more hard-boiled Europe. I know that doesn't make sense, but if you see it, it will make sense.
I've been there. Yeah, I know what you mean. But
yeah, you get this feeling of Europe, but it's a poor Europe, if that makes sense. Depending upon which part of Vlorë that you're in, you can be in an old city, which looks old. It feels ancient. It feels old, etc. Like the materials, the way the buildings look, those type of things. Even though it's still functional, but if you're on the streets, you're in a difficult place to be sometimes. In the way that the traffic, the way that the cities, it looks like Europe, but it's not entirely like Europe. And I know that's hard to explain. God, that's hard to explain. That said, though, when you get to the coast, it's gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. It's just oceans, resorts, et cetera, all throughout, almost like just down an entire boardwalk. It's gorgeous. So I can understand wanting to develop it. A, it's inexpensive in the context of, let's say, the rest of Europe. Let's say, instead of being, let's say, in like Greece or Spain. It's much more inexpensive. You still get the coastline. I don't know. I thought Albania was beautiful, frankly. In fact, I thought it was this not overly touristy veneer that even made it work better.
It has this look. It has this recent history, right? I mean, it had that. It had a communist dictator for many years. It was part of the Soviet bloc. When I was 10 years old or so, I got to visit it. My mom's best friend, who was a very quirky French woman, she was a committed left wing, far communist, you know, total communist, and. She used to complain that the Soviet Union and communist China, then under Mao Zedong, had sold out to the capitalists and that only Albania was really doing it right. And she used to vacation there. And so she convinced my mom and I like to come visit the people's paradise. So we went with her. And I remember we went to the beach and it was very interesting and very strange. One thing that was very interesting was that on the U.S. passport at the time, there was a short list of countries that Americans were not permitted to visit using the passport. And Albania was one of them.
Really?
So we traveled on a French passport. And like the thing is that it was like, but it was very funny. It was like, I believe it was North Korea, North Vietnam, Albania, and I'm probably missing one more. But, and so it was like, it really felt like, even though you're in Europe, you're going to this very different, very strange place. And that's not true about like, you know, I mean, I haven't been to Eastern Europe, but I mean, I've been to, you know, I've been to Russia. And it's like Russia is not as different from France as Albania is from France. I mean, it's like it's different, you know. It's its own thing. It's actually cool. And I think it's like,
yes, I enjoyed it. Like I said, I loved it. Like when I was there, it was kind of this feeling like, wow, this is Europe, but it feels different. It just feels different. I don't know how to explain it. Like there's an old, Europe in and of itself has an old sense to it. So don't get me wrong. But like when you're in places and it's like gravel, construction, it looks more worn. That type of stuff, but to me, that just makes it feel I don't know. It makes me feel, it feels honest. It feels like it's hard boiled, but it's not bad. It's, I don't know. It's, this is, my explanation is failing miserably here.
Well, that's how it I feel about the former Soviet Union, like the Central Asian republics. I love them because of that. I mean, they feel more real.
They feel more real. Maybe that's the word for it. It doesn't feel touristy. It doesn't feel fake. Kind of like, for example, Sharm el-Sheikh versus Dahab. Dahab feels more real. Sharm el-Sheikh feels like a tourist attraction. I prefer the place that feels more real. And I don't mean feel more real like you're going to get mugged. I don't mean it that way. I just mean it feels like something that's lived in as opposed to something that is purely a tourist attraction. Turning Albania into that is not, I would argue it's not a positive. I mean, there's all sorts of construction and everything that's already taken place. And you already have this kind of tourist element, especially on the beach and what's facing the water. But the moment that you get to like Old Town and you get to some of the other interior of it, I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought Albania was fantastic.
Totally. Someone's complaining that they're not finding the program podcast at Gmail and PayPal. I literally just checked. It's there. You got to, I don't know. I don't know what to say. All right. Anyway. Okay. So, yeah, I thought.
Oh, by the way, I felt that way about Baku also. Like, Baku felt like Europe, even though it's not part of the European Union. It just felt like Europe.
Yeah, I loved Baku, even though it was fucking hot as balls.
I tried to stay longer. I loved it so much. I tried to stay. I met the women there are breathtaking. The black hair works. Oh, the jet black hair works. And I ended up finding a chess club there where the woman was brother. It was a sister to the second strongest player in the world. She owned the entirety of the chess club. It was fantastic. I was like, I'm at home.
Now it's kind of like driving me crazy. We can't be. Yeah, it's deprogram podcast at Gmail. I promise it is. Anyway,
I think you're lying.
I hate tech shit. anyway, all right. We'll work on that. But try again. Okay, Greg. Please. Okay. Some questions here. Blake, Ted is the coolest gay dude on the entire internet. Let's go. Thank you very much. Albania says, Albania is known for human trafficking. That's why it's important to NATO Nazis.
It is. I never said it was a perfect country.
Well, what is? The Albanian mafia is savage, very dangerous to do business with. I don't understand what any UHNWs would be doing there. Yeah, don't fuck around with those mobsters in those countries.
I went because I needed to cut expenses after the company went belly up.
Yeah.
I found rent for $300. I booked a stay for 2 months, and then I found another place for $300 in Malaysia.
I remember when you were global hopscotching, would you do that again? Did you feel like it was a smart...
I had no plans of coming back to the States. To be honest. Like the next place I was supposed to go to was Butimi, Georgia, and an American could stay there for a year. You could stay in Albania for a year also, but the issue became cost because the entire point of the trip was cost. It was how do I cut expenses? Right. And fact of the matter is I could cut expenses significantly and sharply by leaving the country as opposed to staying in the country. So the amount I paid for transportation, the amount I paid for food, the amount I paid for rent, all those things were dramatically less. And so I could go to Malaysia, then 3 months in, I'm sorry, 3 months in Malaysia, 2 months in Indonesia, et cetera, meaning each location I was going to, I was saving money month after month after month after month. The plan was sound. It wasn't about travel. It was about cutting costs. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for me getting ill, I would probably be in Batumi, Georgia right now.
Gotcha. Maybe Bluth Funk. Ted, how's your French residency coming along? Hey, I can pop on a plane tomorrow and just go to France and just live there if I want. I mean, I'm a French citizen, but I'm here. I like it here. I'm hoping not to have to. I mean, seriously, I would leave if I had to go into exile. Which, at a certain point, look, if the elections are canceled, for example, I'm going to start to I'm going to be worried about, you know, if the repressive apparatus of the state, there goes Robbie with his dual citizenship needs to be banned. It's like he's just jealous, right?
Well, I don't think,
right, Robbie, you're just jealous. You're jealous.
No, you can't be loyal to two countries at the same time. You got to pick one.
I'm not loyal to anyone.
So citizenship means that you, that you're vested in on that country. That means you're lashed to the mast. I mean, that's like saying that that pig in Florida, Randy Fine, is solely loyal to the United States. Or Brian Mast, he's all in with him in his IDF uniform. You can't.
It's when there's a conflict between two countries that's an issue. It'd be hard to be loyal to, say, the U.S.
Are you saying that France and America never have conflicts?
They have conflicts.
There's never disagreements?
France is, as you would say, a vassal state of the United States.
Oh, France is totally a bitch of the United States. And that's part of the problem. So, I mean, the best thing that all of Europe could do would be declare independence of the United States. But you can't have a dual citizenship.
I couldn't agree more.
Get the pacifier out.
Bye, Robbie.
I agree they need to give her the pacifier.
Well, we have the system that we have. It's like capitalism. I would vote against it, but as long as we have it, I'd like to earn money, you know, or I need to earn money. I'm not, you know, it's not a top priority.
By the way, I don't really see a problem with the dual citizenship, with the exception of the military. Like, meaning the guys walking around in IDF uniforms. Okay, those people are treasonous, especially if, like, meaning, how do I trust you to vote in the interest of the United States if indeed you're walking around in an IDF uniform? But that's different than just rando person in the country. I don't see the issue with dual citizenship in that sense.
No, I agree. Obviously. P.W. Walker, elections don't matter, so no one would notice if they were canceled.
Well, no, I don't think that's true. I think elections do have consequences.
That part of the reason we talk about them. I also think, I mean, look, I take his point. Elections definitely don't matter as much as they ought to. And you know, they're not responsive. But I mean, I do think the cancellation of the elections would lead to greater repression by the state against people, critics of the state, people like us. And that would, so I mean, look, here's the thing. In life, there's like the way you would like things to be perfectly perfect and in an ideal theoretical world. And then there's the reality of the life that you have to sort of survive yourself, your family, your friends as best you can. Thus, hey, dual citizenship, that's helpful. But I totally understand the argument against it. I mean, totally.
By the way, if they cancel the elections, I think all hell would break loose.
You think?
I think that would be a trivial matter.
What do you think would happen?
I think these calls about, I think the problem is that we've considered or had this kind of pretext of democracy. Well, let me answer it this way, because I know it sounds like I'm going around Robin Hood's bomb, but I want to explain why. It sounds, for the longest time, this country has gone with the idea that we're, quote unquote, democracy, that we're a representative government, or whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. but that people had a choice, and that the choice in and of itself made us somehow different, and that the choice gives and confers legitimacy. The moment that you get rid of that, then all hell breaks loose. I mean, like, meaning the entire point of Clinton not challenging the election and giving it to Jill Stein kind of makes the point about we confer legitimacy of a particular candidate and of a particular government based on the vote. And the moment that that goes away, all of that legitimacy goes away, all of the pretense of this country being a quote unquote representative government, all of that goes away. And then it becomes, okay, well, what replaces that? And if that's naked aggression, naked repression, then I think the oppositional forces in the country itself becomes significant. Like if Donald Trump would have declared himself King of America, when he tried to overthrow the government, would other states or certain states, let's say with California and Washington State, have recused themselves? Like, meaning, would they have said, we have nothing to do with this, we are independent? Mm-hmm. They could have, and they could have done so legitimately, considering that at that point, the government is no longer legitimate. It's kind of like Ukraine. The moment that you overthrow the government of Ukraine, the legitimacy of whatever representative government goes away, and you get the regions that decide to break away because from their point of view, and truthfully, the government is no longer legitimate. The deal that we've had, the social contract, has just been destroyed. All bets are off. I think we're in a world of fuckery at that point. But tell me if you think I'm wrong on this.
Well, I agree with everything you just said. I guess the question is, what would the American people actually do about it? Would there be protests? Sure. Would there be protests violent enough to threaten the government into feeling that they needed to change anything? I don't believe that. I think they would. The machinery of repression would be increased. Critics would be rounded up and silenced, we would just disintegrate into a fascist type state.
Would state see from the union?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know. Maybe eventually. And I think, this the thing is, over time, anything is possible, right? There could be a violent resistance that would ultimately cause parts of the country to peel off. That I could see. But the repression of the initial impulse of the Trump administration in this case would be great, to send in the military, militarized ICE, ramp up the gulags, shove people away. That's what they would want to do. I mean, it would be their first, self-preservation of the regime at all cost would be their move, right?
Agreed.
Yeah.
I just think that the consequences, especially the long term, will be devastating.
Oh, no question.
You need a pretense. Like, meaning, even if you notice, they never do things nakedly. No dictator, no tyrant, no country. I mean, North Korea calls themselves democratic, right?
Right.
It's like Kim Jong-un is a democratic leader. It's like, okay, sure is. Like, no country does this stuff with honesty. They never have. They never do. Human beings, we don't act that way for whatever particular reason. Even when everybody knows that you're lying, they still lie. And right. So the moment that you get rid of that fig leaf, the president shows his penis to the world. Okay, that's a little rough. Right? Yeah. Like, meaning I don't have to now pretend.
What can the world do about it? I mean, they can decide to do as little business as possible with us. Interact as less as possible. It's like, what does a resident of Washington or New York or San Francisco do when they see a crazy person like shadow boxing on the street? They sort of keep walking. They try to ignore them. That's what the rest of the world would do about us.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about us, though. I mean, and I shouldn't have said to the world. President shows his dick to America. Okay, that's pretty heavy. Right, like that's overturning the entire pretext or the pretense of what America claims itself to be.
Totally.
And it's just at that point nakedly saying, "But look, we're no longer having elections."
On December 20th, 2000, when the Supreme Court illegally ruled to turn over to hand the election to George W. Bush, I remember opening my window. I lived right on the way, way, way on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. My apartment was on a park that like looked down over Harlem, and yeah. I opened the window and I was waiting to see if I would hear any yelling or from this very democratic city, any breaking windows, any car alarms, nothing. And I remember just thinking there wasn't even so much as a protest demonstration. And that was a coup d'etat in a very contested election. Nobody did anything.
But see, it was done under the idea of the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court oftentimes is given this
legitimacy
of legitimacy in a way that I don't think the Trump administration would be able to get if the Trump administration at some point just said, you know what, the election's over with.
Yeah, well, there would be, I mean, I think things would get spicy. The question is, how spicy would they get?
How spicy, right. Yeah, at that point, they should burn the White House down.
Agreed.
I'm just saying, right?
It can be done again. Let's see. All right. So let's get to a few comments here. Hey, Greg, thank you very much for the $10 donation. Let's see. Zach Diecast. I listened to this channel just to brush up on my politics when I was like 15 years old, especially listening to Ted. Thank you so much. Nothing like making you feel young again. There's a lot of shuddering and cringing involved. Okay. All right. Thank you. You know, whatever brings in the clicks. John D. Cockefeller, thanks for the donation. Robbie, your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to get JT off chess and into BG3. Guaranteed Gale or Will fan. JT, nothing would happen. The U.S. population is too docile. Ted, what's up, handsome? I don't know, cutie.
I don't know, man. I hope we aren't that docile. Especially if it's something like that. Like, that would be a shock to the conscience. At least I think it would be. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is me being too optimistic.
I think you're
the moment they come and say elections are over with.
Elections are over. What's the point of them?
What's the point of elections?
Yeah. I mean, seriously, if your candidates are the people who are selected by the donor class and you get to pick turd A or turd B and they're paid for by the exact same people, and then you elect that said turd and then you put that turd in the punch bowl, are you surprised that your Kool-Aid tastes like crap? Nothing ever changes. That was Thomas Massie's moral sin, is that he refused to play that game and he got taken out. And as far as the states go, they should succeed. But the problem is that with the creation of the National Guard, the states ceded their ability to raise their own militaries. It's just like Europe. I mean, for example, here in Montana, they passed a law. It is called the Montana Intrastate Freedom Act, which meant that you could make a fully automatic rifle, basically a machine gun here in the United States, here in Montana, it'd be legal because it's intrastate. How the Logan Act works is that they ban those guns based on interstate commerce. Well, if this gun is made in Montana and stays in Montana, then the interstate clause doesn't apply. So then the feds threatened to pull the highway funds and Montana buckled. That's how it is with all the states now. They bribe you with your own money. They have no power. They have no way of saying no. The 17th Amendment is the most destructive force ever because that broke the power of the state to actually stand up to the federal government. Federalism is dead. The elections don't matter. It's a facade. It's just like, you know, when Augustus, when he overthrew the Republic, he didn't abolish the Senate. The Senate just kept on going for another 100 years. It's just, right. It was maintaining the facade. That's all this is a joke.
The facade is the point.
Yeah.
I'm saying that the facade matters.
People are so drugged up now. People can't even agree with what an American even is anymore. We can't agree on what a man or a woman is. No, I mean, you walk around, you have people who are just drugged out of their minds, drunk, stoned. The population is completely hopeless. If you cancel elections tomorrow, you'll have some people squawking, but there's not going to, no one's going to care. They say, at least now they're being honest.
I get the turd A, turd B thing. Fair enough. And I agree with you. And I agree even that most things don't change in the context of elections because the things that people care about, war, how money is allocated, as you point out, immigration, jobs, the amount of money people make on those jobs, healthcare, these things don't change. But people still have this illusion of choice. And I'm saying the illusion is there for reasons. It's not trivial. The illusion matters. It's kind of like the Matrix. It's like the problem is choice. You want to give people this pretending that they get a choice.
I think it matters more for geopolitics than domestic politics, though.
It becomes very important when that choice is moved. The reason that these guys don't go after the electoral system as being fraudulent up until the point of Trump was because the illusion of choice mattered. Like, that's not a trivial thing. That's what I'm trying to get across. The moment that you let people know, A, you don't have a choice. B, these people aren't legitimate. And C, anything that you do in the context of these people not being legitimate is fair game because they're not legitimate. The legitimacy is the point, even if it's the illusion of legitimacy. I hope that makes sense.
No, it does.
This is on some level political theory. Like, this idea that you have this kind of naked aggression allows for naked aggression. It's the reason why they didn't want to kill kings and queens, because they didn't want to think that kings and queens could be killed. The moment that you kill one, you've made the point that you can do so. If they remove that, all bets are off. That's all I'm saying. Whether that takes place in 1 week or whether that takes place in 2 years is irrelevant to the point.
I don't think that it matters domestically. I think that we keep this facade of republicanism, small r, alive, or democracy, if you would,
How? They get rid of elections. How? How do you do that? Like, do you see North Korea as being a democratic country?
Sure. So as you vote for the right person, it's like the Soviet Union. You vote for whoever you want, so as they're a communist.
There's no election in North Korea. Kim Jong-un is the leader.
That was a joke. Yeah, no, the point that I'm making is that we keep the facade of elections going not for domestic politics, but for international politics. That way we can wag our finger at those dirty Russians or other people say, you know, you're not a democratic society. Well, neither are we.
No, but we're postulating that they get rid of elections. And the argument that it sounds like you guys are making is that nothing will change. People nothing will change a little bit, but for all intents and purposes,
it domestic politics, matter. Nothing would change. We have elections for foreign consumption, not American consumption.
I think you're both right.
We don't give a shit.
You guys are not in conflict with each other. So, I mean, Robbie's right. There would be no uprising. I mean, what you would like to think is, you know, 5 million Americans take up arms, take to the streets, overthrow the government, reinstall democracy. That's not going to happen. JT's right too. The legitimacy of the state, the veneer, the facade, it matters. It affects people, and like maybe people, they go to work and they obey and they pay their taxes and they still call President Trump president, even though he's not president really under the rules that they set up themselves. But in their minds, they walk around with their fingers crossed behind their backs. They kind of don't believe in any of it, and it's all hollow. And that means it's like an eggshell, and it's like basic with nothing inside, and it's like ready to crack at any time. It's weak. There's nothing really there. But you're both right. Yeah, you know, I mean, the facade matters, but we're also not going to see.
I mean, the Caligula, to
rebel. They don't.
Yeah, clearly.
It may not be overnight. And by the way, the state's argument. Look, just because you write something down doesn't mean it matters. It matters up until the point that it doesn't. Like, we have a nuclear treaty for space. Mm-hmm. Sure. Do you think that should matter if we're at war, world war? It's not. The Russians are going to launch a nuke and destroy all of our satellites with an EMP the moment that shit pops off. Because it's not going to matter the moment that we get into some kind of conflict. And I'm saying the same thing is true for states. They will find guns. They will find weapons. They will find the ability to deal with an oppressive government, especially if you're talking about like California, somewhere that's way to the west. I just don't have this belief that they can pull that shit off where they're like, yeah, well, there are no more elections. And everything just keeps going the way it goes.
I really think it. Because here's where I'd push back on this. So go away, because I know that this is going off the rails. People want stability more than anything else. Without stability, true. You can't have a house, you can't have a job, you can't have an economy, you can't have anything.
True.
And so I think that as the United States becomes more and more chaotic internally with our politics, with our economy, as things just fall apart, people will sacrifice everything for order. That's the point that I'm making. And what they're going to do is that they will create to quote Rahm Emanuel, never let a crisis go to waste.
Right.
As a self-governing people who cannot govern their own home, cannot govern a nation. As things implode, as things fall apart, then what you're going to see is that the cry for order is going to be such that if elections are suspended, no one is going to care. That's the point that I'm making. This is nothing more than a joke. Now, when Caligula, when he appointed his horse as a consul, how is that any different than Pete Hegseth being our Secretary of War? That's a serious question. Who's smarter?
Horse or
Pete Hegseth? Which one has an actual use?
The horse was useful, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, ride a horse.
All this is a puppet show. Trump's not even running the country. It's his donors that are running the country. It's people who paid his legal bills who are running the country. It's the bankers in Tel Aviv who are running the country. Let's just be honest about this. The American Republic is dead. It's been dead since the 1960s. I argue it died in 1865.
Look, I don't have an issue with making the case that we are bought as a country by basically people who effectively pay this kind of, that politicians are intermediaries between the rich. Like basically a deal is made between the wealth of the nation and the population and the politician is kind of intermediary between these two. I don't have an issue with that point. My basic point is not untouched or is unmolested. The pretense of a representative government matters. And they fight hard for that idea of legitimacy of the population, not just in the US, but all across the world in all of these countries. And that there's a reason why even repressive governments call themselves, quote unquote, democratic, is because they want the idea that they have legitimacy of the population. If you lose that and you basically blow that away, there are consequences for that.
Yeah, you're hitting us on a spike.
My main point.
That's the point that I'm making. But here's the difference, though. Could you make the argument that Gaddafi cared more about the Libyan people than the American government cares about the American people? I could.
Yes.
Because he was invested in building up his nation. He was invested in educating his population. This is a debate that we had on the old the Discord channel yesterday. You know, some people are going after me about my stance on H-1B. So, well, we got to have these people because the American peoples are uneducated. Well, sure they are. But you don't need to educate your population. One, if you can import educated people who are paid for by taxpayers of other countries. Second, an educated population is harder to control.
Robbie,
this is all by design. This is all by design. And our government hates us.
You're preaching to the choir. And 100%. It doesn't touch my point in the least.
Yeah, it does. Elections do not freaking matter. Nothing ever changes. Robbie, you always get John McCain. I'm
not making the argument that elections change things in the overt sense of the word. My argument is that the pretense of those elections matter. Meaning it's the fig leaf of democracy. But the fig leaf matters. It's not an irrelevant tool. It's not a bug. It's a feature of it. The idea that it confers legitimacy on a particular person, whether the person is going to do something or not, is irrelevant.
But the show always comes to an end.
People all the time that are full of shit. Trump was full of shit. Obama was full of shit. Bush was full of shit. Clinton was full of shit. You can go down the list. None of these people did things.
You brought up Rome earlier, right? The trap, the idea that it was, you know, the Senate and the people of Rome, right? SPQR. I mean, you know, all for centuries after the overthrow of the Republic, the Roman statesmen and citizens kept asserting that either they were still a republic or that they were going to become a republic again anytime soon, and that this imperial thing was just a temporary interregnum. So you could say, okay, looking back with the benefit of hindsight, and especially when Roman senators and emperors started having funny Germanic names, you might say, okay, that's all. It was all bullshit. Okay, well, now it was all bullshit, but at the time, it meant stuff to people, and they thought it was real, and it motivated them. It incentivized them. It made them believe in the state. It's kind of like the days after the overthrow of Nazi Germany, and people would walk through the streets and they'd see bundles of, you know, German Reichmarks, just like litter on the street. You know, This used to be worth a lot. Now it's not worth anything. Why? What changed? You know, people just stopped believing that they mattered. So like, you're right, Robbie, it's bullshit, but also I guess, Jabril's right too. Bullshit matters.
Yeah, I'm not making the argument that with these, look, I'm not making the argument, nor have I ever made the argument that what these guys are doing is to the best interest of the American public. That's not the case I'm making here. I get what you're saying, Robbie. I'm not disagreeing with you. The point that I'm making is this pretending, the illusion of it matters. The illusion is what people respond to. I've made the argument, power is a shadow on the wall. Okay, well, what does that mean? It means people respond to where they think power is. Part of the reason that Iran didn't respond as strongly as they've been doing recently is because they didn't necessarily fully grasp America's power and what they could do in the context of a war, and they didn't want to be in a war. Whereas now, what are they doing? They're hitting American bases left and right because they realize America can't do what we might have thought that they could do. They put their ante up, and they failed miserably in the context of their ante, power being a shadow on the wall. Okay, well, now it's been exposed for what it is. I'm saying the same thing is true for the illusion of democracy or the illusion of a representative government. People will conform to what they believe is true, not necessarily what is true. So the fact that these people have been screwing them over left and right, it still goes under the idea of the pretense of a democratic choice.
No, I get it. And listen, I agree with everything you just now said. But what I'm saying is that there will come a point where the show no longer matters.
Oh, true.
And when that comes, they're going to stop wasting time on the whole idea of having elections. For example, let's just pull a hypothetical. Let's just take Ted's nightmare scenario that Trump cancels the elections. Well, what would be the pretext? The radical leftists, the communists, are trying to go over and they're going to try to loot Medicare. And so in order to save the entitlements, in order to save the boomers, we've got to suspend the elections because this is existential. Or those Iranians, what they're going to do, or they're going to hack all the voting machines, and the institutions themselves are compromised, and we have to suspend these elections till they get fixed. Basically, just pull the Zelensky model. It's a perfect democracy. It's incredibly stable because without elections, you don't have to worry about chaos, right? If it works over there, why can't it work here? It will. That's the point that I'm making. It's a show, and eventually the show will end. All Hollywood movies come to an end, even the good ones. Gone with the Wind, no longer, it doesn't play anymore.
All I'm pointing out is that the moment that comes to an end, in earnest, where people are clear that it comes to an end, I think all hell breaks loose.
I think it will.
We no longer have a stable country. In fact, I think a country that has more guns than people becomes very unwieldy, very quick when these guys no longer have legitimacy.
I hope that you're right. Seriously, I hope that you're right, and I hope that I'm wrong. I just think that the population's too drugged, too stoned, and too hopeless to care.
And disorganized.
Really bad. If that's
and, there's no la- and there's no left, and the left is the only thing that could save us.
Or the Christian right. You could rally, you know, either way. You can have
fascists take over. In fact, I would probably go with the fascists take over as opposed to the left. There is no left.
No, there's no left.
I mean, you just got to pick something, but I'll go away now. Bye.
Okay, bye. All right. So let's do some comments. Mr. Ali, the U.S. needs a long march, Mao style, and gather up all U.S. American peasants to march on the Capitol. Well, they can't literally be peasants because all our, you know, our agribusiness has eaten up all our peasants. But yeah, the working class and the poor. Yeah, that'd be awesome. John D. Cockefeller, the response to no elections would be the exact same as the response to no Epstein files, being ruled by pedos, Trump's, pun intended, canceled elections, and yet the White House hasn't burned. EOL 43, I think Robbie brings up an interesting point on the addiction of society. However, it's probably a symptom, not the cause of a broken system. I think it's great. Adam Tube, special interest and interests in Israel by the legislative, then the executive, judiciary follows. Us Americans become the milked cow. How is that sovereign freedom and democracy republic we stand? We can't stand. F you so, thanks for the dollar. What would happen to democracy, communism, racism, all the isms when the aliens finally show up? Do we become humans or still kill each other?
That's an interesting question, by the way.
It is an interesting question.
Like, meaning what is humanity when it realizes it's not alone? And do we just become humans? Like, when I go, let's, like,
do we unify? Do we recognize the common threat?
Exactly. Yeah. What does humanity mean in that context? That's a fascinating question. That is a fascinating question. And considering David Grush is going to be out here doing White House, a call for transparency on the issue of UFOs starting, I think, Friday, he's going to be at the Capitol. I've even thought about going to the Capitol to see it. Him do so. Do you know David Grush? David Grush is one of the whistleblowers that recently came out.
No, I don't.
Yeah. So ATIP, AWOS was the government program to study strange phenomena. ATIP was a subsection of that program ran by Luis Elizondo. One of the people who was involved in looking at those files was David Grush. He was also one of the investigators that was in the program. These are the guys who put out the Pentagon videos, the Tic Tac, Go Fast, and I forget the other one. But basically, Grush was involved in that program. Grush is coming out of the shadows and effectively saying, look, A, there were crash retrievals, B, there were bodies, and C, the government needs to come clean. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, the closest thing to a planet-wide threat that we've faced is climate change, and we have not gotten... Well, I mean, much of the world has somewhat agreed to at least be on the same page about it, but we've really... The United States has not joined in. We've really fucked it up. Let's see. FUSO, read Federalist Papers number 10. From the beginning, the elites divide us to maintain their power. Okay, I don't know what's, I don't know which one is number 10. FUSO, U.S. elections are a psyop on Americans to make us feel like we have a say and to stay invested and not revolt.
Yes.
I concur.
By the way, the primaries, same thing. Like when in the Democratic primaries where they cheated Sanders, all of it was legal. The Democrats don't need to have primaries. No, they don't need primaries. They can just give you a candidate.
It's they're private. The two parties are private corporations. Courts have repeatedly ruled this. They can set any rules they want. They can say our nominee is going to be the person with 16 letters in their name, and
it's like Bob Cobb is a great guy. Who's like, who the hell is Bob Cobb? The person we chose. That's who Bob Cobb is.
Right.
They are not required to have a primary. Nope. They just do it because they want you to buy in.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. And in some cases, they kind of don't do a primary sometimes, right? I mean, they cancel them all the time. It's not really that uncommon. Adam Tube, Iranians will not hack anything. All threats are domestic and Israeli loyalists. Yeah, I don't think the Iranians are going to hack anything. They don't need to. Like, why? Why? John D. Cockefeller, no, we kill the aliens. I hope you're right.
So that is something that some of the people have come out and said, Barbara specifically. The UFO thing is getting very weird. That's all. It's getting very weird. I'm not even going to go into it. And it's not that it's entirely weird. It will be weird for the American public, especially when you get into the consciousness stuff, because that seems to be something that runs through it all the way through. This kind of, oftentimes when people are thinking of the subject, they're thinking of it in materialistic forms. Oh, there's a craft. There's a metallic object. That object is doing things that is breaking our physics. But the people who are on the inside of it also talk about this conscious element where they are in contact with these things in some fashion. It's wild, but it will be a hell of a reveal to the American public. I put it that way, if they come up with it.
Do we care about the Todd Blanche being nominated for Attorney General?
I don't know if it matters, if I'm being bluntly honest. I mean, like, what is Todd Blanche going to do? I mean, we've just had this kind of big argument over the shit not mattering. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, what is Todd Blanche going to do that some other rando that he puts in wouldn't do?
Yeah. I don't think it really makes any difference, but I thought it was worth mentioning.
No, it's definitely. I mean, I guess I'm trying to ask for significance because I don't know Todd Blanche as a political actor where I would know significance. So I don't want to downplay it if there's some level of significance to it.
Yeah. And then the other, I mean, I think also we probably would be remiss not to talk about Congo and Ebola. It looks like the I don't know if we would call it an epidemic yet, but I think you could. It's not a pandemic yet. But Ebola is spreading. It's spreading to the extent now that there aren't even enough facilities and workers to monitor it. So we're not really clear on the scale of it because this is happening in remote parts of the eastern part of the country, which are embroiled in civil conflict and corrupt mine operations and everything. It's like the ghost of King Leopold lives, right? And I guess the thing is the blame game is going to start as soon as some Americans start to die. Right. They're going to say, well, this is Trump's fault. USAID was closed. USAID used to have those workers to monitor it. That's how you would have been able to get control of the situation early on. The right's going to say, well, they're going to have racist explanations. That's because in Congo, they, you know, they sleep with their dead, and it's like they don't know what they're doing.
I guess my thing is, why is this a U.S. concern? I don't mean to be a dick about it. And I mean, when I'm saying a dick about it, I just mean I don't mean to be obtuse about it. Sure, we should help, but why is this the U.S. issue?
It's a global concern, right? I mean, Ebola, any disease can go anywhere, obviously.
Sure. But shouldn't it be, if it's a global concern, shouldn't it be a global matter?
Right.
Like, meaning this idea that the United States is God emperor and in control of this stuff, and it's somehow our blame one way or the other.
It's a WHO issue, and which means it's not our concern since we're not in the WHO anymore. I mean, I can't even believe that.
That's amazing.
Right? I mean, it's so incredibly stupid.
And all of this for COVID. All of this because of COVID. He didn't like the response for the WHO on the issue of COVID. Yeah, that's dumb. Again, when I point out degradation, it's stuff like this. This is degradation. You can look at the dumbing down of our presidents. You can look at the dumbing down of our policies, the inability for us to kind of even deal with real things. And again, I would imagine you need real elections to deal with real things. Us being at the WHO is insane. As you point out, viruses, these things go all around the world. We obviously should have a presence in dealing with health around the globe.
Yeah, just to share information with every other country. I mean, it's scientists don't believe in these international borders. This comment from Matteo is relevant to this discussion. The DNC literally just shoved Kamala in there without a primary. Don't need to look back. Well, what's the relationship here? You know what I would like, all Democratic candidates for president to say, to promise, we will systemically look at everything Trump did, and we will pretty much reverse it all, you know, with few exceptions. I mean, you know, I'm sure there's a few things here or there that should stay, but for the most part, like things like pulling out of the WHO, just we're going to sign an executive order on January 20th. It's just going to be sign, auto pen, like just get them done. Like just, I mean, it drives me crazy that like you can vote a maniac like Donald Trump out of office, maybe vote him out. And then you don't have any reasonable assurance that the Democrats will reverse these actions. Joe Biden left a lot of Trump's first term shit in place. That's why we have that idiotic Space Force is still a branch of the armed forces. You know, I mean, it's lot I can go through lots of tax stuff that Trump did remained in place under Biden. I mean, there's no why. I mean, this all goes to the discussion about like the you know what Robbie and you were talking about. It's all window dressing. What's the fucking point of even voting for another party if the other party isn't even going to change policy?
Yeah, no, agreed, 1,000% agreed. And I mean, root and branch, like, and claw back some of the stuff that he's done also, meaning the deals, the money that he's been able to get, claw all of it back. We're taking it all back. We're unraveling these policies, et cetera. I agree with you. Will they do that? That's not typically what they do. I mean, when Obama got in office, he took out, 80, 90% of George Bush tax cuts. The people obviously weren't going to get their homes back from that went belly up under Obama. And
Obama's very first day, I believe it was, his first thing he did was to go to Bethesda, go to Langley and assure the torturers that they weren't going to be prosecuted.
Yep. I'm standing in front of you. What is it? Standing, I'm protecting you from the pitchforks or something that was being said.
Yeah.
Like, no, man, I agree with you. But that's not really what we get. And I guess my hope, my fervent hope, and I know it's hope, so put it in proper context of not ultimately mattering, is that the American public gets fed up. Like, at some point they realize, wait a minute, we're being fucked. We're being fucked royally. I don't even feel the Vaseline. I mean, at least use Vaseline. Like, and they get that in a root, in a flesh to bone way. in a way that alters the politics. I just don't see that happening. And oftentimes when you talk to people, it's this dead-eyed, you know, so what, you're not supporting my candidate, so you're for Harris or you're for Trump? And it's like, why is that the only political methodology that you guys can come up with? Like, that is the limits of your political horizon. They're fucking you over. It's like, why? Like, and oftentimes they don't see it. And this goes to Robbie's point. Many people just prefer stability. And you have a political system in a way that's so, that shields people from the mechanics of what goes on. Meaning they don't know why their life is the way it is. They think it's entirely related to them, that it is purely their responsibility. Missing the fact that they're within the context of a system in a larger order. And that larger order dictates the contours that they operate in. They don't see it that way. They don't see it. They go from generation to generation. And as you get older, you get context. But you get a 20-year-old who comes into the system and is going to have to learn the same things that you've learned over the course of your life. And then by the time they get to 40 or 50, they realize, oh, right, we're in a system. We're being fucked. It's too late. 20-year-old.
I think that China is more of a republic than what we are. And here's what I'm going to say this. It is a one party, it is a one party country. And I've thought about this a lot in China, and Mr. Lee in the chat, fact check me on this because I mean, you're Chinese. In China, you cannot change the party, but you can change the system. Here in the United States, you can change the party, but you can't change the system. Ultimately, the entire point of an election is to change the system. If you can't change the system, what's the point?
Well, to change the direction, maybe not the system, right?
Well, yeah, that's what I was about to say. I don't think you can change the Chinese system either. I would argue it's a capitalist system.
But you, I think like Robbie's point is that you can change the direction in a country like China. Well, you can't, but someone can. I don't think anyone can. I don't think Donald Trump can change the direction here, as you pointed out.
But see, I think it's a capitalist country, and I think it's doing what a capitalist country does. It's maximizing profit. I think it's just getting to be more pure at it, whereas beforehand, there was this pretense of a democracy that was around it. And look, you can disagree with me on this if you want to, or disagree with me on this. The reality of it is, in the capital, human beings perfect things as a rule. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about tools, if you're talking about a process, if you're talking about sports, so we develop football, people get better at football, they get more aggressive, they get stronger, they get faster, they run the ball better, we get perfect the rules, etc. But that's the same thing is true in any system that we effectively build. If we build a capitalist system, we get better at doing business in a capitalist system. It just so happens that the more pure you get at one, it's kind of like Heisenberg particle wave stuff. Basically, I can know the position of an electron, but I can't know the position and speed simultaneously. It's the same thing. You can't hit both. You can't have this great democratic system and this great capitalistic system, and both of these things are working in tandem. When you perfect one, the other one diminishes. And in our case, profit is the goal. You can say the same thing is true in the communist system, but China's trying to find a way to kind of mend the gap between those two things. But I'm saying in America, the issue is that we have a capitalist system, and that system we're getting better at.
We do. That's it for today's show. We're running a little bit late. TMI show with Ted Rall and Manila Chan. That's me. Coming up right now, DMZ America podcast covering the death of cartoonist Marjane Satrapi at 11 a.m. Eastern time with Scott Stantis. Always a pleasure, JT. I will see you tomorrow at 9 a.m. Bye.
Have a good one, guys. Bye-bye.